Take Me With You, a short story by Greer Sickinger Maher, 1984, Cincinnati's posh Hyde Park neighborhood. Jenny had all her girls for a sleepover, just like most weekends. However, it was becoming increasingly intense and, for some, disturbing. Jenny stood in the middle of the bed singing Prince and the Revolution's Take Me With You. The other girls both laughed and rolled their eyes because they all knew who she sang for. Any man who wants to fondle a 15-year-old is a total perv. Stay away. That was Elizabeth, who ate pretzels, as they all sat in a circle in their pajamas on Jenny's bed with the cat in the middle. Oh, she wants more than that. That was Byrne, who was very blunt. When she finished her song, she plopped down. So when do you babysit his kids next? I'm keeping an eye on you. That's Betsy, who sat sipping a root beer with a slight smile on her face as she ran her hand over the cat's fur with her other hand. I think it's mutual. He wants me. I know he does. I'll be there on Thursday. What I'm doing is waiting for a time when his wife Sharon is out of town, and then I can be alone with him. Byrne's eyes pop. Dude, you're never alone with him because the kids are there. Behave yourself because you don't want to get the guy arrested. He runs that bigwig law firm with his sister, Houston and Dudley. The girl in the corner? She's Elaine. She used to babysit for Sebastian and Sharon, but when she had a cold and couldn't babysit on an occasion when Sebastian and Sharon had an important event, she asked Pretty Jenny to babysit. Little did anyone know this would be a pivotal moment in Jenny's life. Elaine stared at Jenny, shaking her head. Daddy issues. I'm telling you, it's daddy issues, Elaine announced. Your parents are freaking perfect. Paula and Leland, they're right out of Good Parents magazine. Your dad was our volleyball coach and your mom was our brownie troop leader. Remember when I had poison oak and she stayed with me until my mom came? You have no excuse except lust. Plain old-fashioned lust, Betsy insisted. Okay, let's go back to 1981, Jenny's 12th birthday. All the girls remember how her parents, Paula and Leland, had invited the girl across the street who has Down syndrome. She was not to spend the night, but just come for a few hours. Jenny had her arm around the girl and made every minute count for her. She had her sit next to her when she opened her gifts and remarked to her about everything. Jenny was deeply nurturing and affectionate toward this special guest as she pressed her cheek against hers. She had hugged her after walking her out when it was time for her to leave. Her friends remembered the old Jenny, who, with the help of her parents, Paula and Leland, was on her way to being a trusted soul in the world. I don't think she has daddy issues, Elaine. I think she's just desperate for this 40-year-old guy. She has a crush. The fact that she can't have him makes it more agonizing. I've never felt like this in all 15 years of my life. Not a second goes by that he's not in my head, Jenny told them, turning around to look at a photo taken in the neighborhood that included Sebastian. All the girls looked at each other and rolled their eyes. Jenny would be singing Prince and the Revolution's Take Me With You for most of the night. In a moment, however, when Jenny goes into the bathroom, her 10-year-old brother James will come in to discuss his unrequited love with all the girls. It seems James is trying to attract the attention of a classmate named Cindy. The girls have known James since he was born. The girls will join him in singing Jay Giles' band Love Stinks. 1987 Blockbuster Video Store, Hyde Park Neighborhood, Cincinnati. It was pouring rain and the girls, still having their slumber parties, could now drive and were 18. That's Betsy, Elaine, Byrne, Elizabeth, and Jenny. There, they're pulling into the Blockbuster. Byrne is opening her umbrella. The rest will get wet. Jenny will get out of the car, look up at the rain, and twirl for a moment. The other girls have already gone inside. Now watch. Jenny is approaching the door. She starts to open it, but it abruptly opens. It's Sebastian. He smiles at his young babysitter. They haven't seen each other in several months due to his aging parents staying at their home for a visit. They stand under the Blockbuster awning while the rain crashes inches beside them. The music partially flowed out the door so Hart's new song, How Do I Get You Alone, could be heard, and the cool air conditioner could be felt. How have you been, kid? Sebastian smiled at her in a fatherly way. Oh, I'm great, really great. Yeah, I'm getting ready to go off to Ohio State in the fall. Really? My wife and I both went there. You'll love it. Sebastian looked sincere. Jenny already knew they both attended Ohio State. She had been steps ahead. She tried to think fast. How could she get him alone? I'm considering majoring in pre-law or the like. You and Sharon have been such an inspiration to me. I would love to come over and talk to you about Ohio State's law programs. Jenny realized she sounded like a groupie. Sebastian didn't seem to pick up on anything. Oh, hey, anytime, kid. As long as there are vices, there's a need for us jackasses. There's no shortage of problems in Cincinnati, but I sometimes wonder if there's a shortage of counsel. Hey, we need a receptionist at the firm, so if you're open to a summer job, it would at least give you a glimpse of the world of law. You may hate it or you may love it. Jenny stood stunned. He might as well have asked her out on a date. She was wildly excited. I would be so grateful. Please give me the information. I will follow up. No problem, kid. You can come by tomorrow afternoon if you're available. I play tennis in the morning, but I'll be home after noon or so. By now, a flock of seagulls' song Wishing could be heard drifting out the door. Jenny wanted to hold on to every minute with Sebastian, because all that mattered was him. She even considered telling him flat out that she was in love with him, never mind the 28-year age difference. She could hear the music and see his handsome face in the rain as a backdrop. The kaleidoscope eyes and mushroom high she had were more of his generation. She could still feel the cool air conditioner drifting out. There was nowhere in the world she'd rather be than standing under the awning of Blockbuster on this rainy, early evening, talking to Sebastian, the man she loved since she was 15. Jenny's friends in Blockbuster were walking around the store, trying to look without looking. The slumber party that night had Jenny back to sing and Take Me With You, but now she added Tiffany's hit, I Think We're Alone Now. The TV was on with a trailer for an upcoming movie due to hit the theaters at the end of the year. The movie featured Michael Douglas and was called Wall Street, and Michael Douglas' character, Gordon Gekko, could be seen stating, "Greed works. Money never sleeps." But Byrne looked at her with a serious expression and said, "I'm actually a little worried, Jenny. You want one thing. You think of one thing. He seems incongruent from that. His focus is to help you, not to screw you." "Maybe it would help her," Betsy added with a laugh, and they all agreed. "It wouldn't be fair to him, Jenny," Elaine spoke quietly. Jenny was determined to be alone with Sebastian as often and as long as possible. She envisioned herself running the law firm alongside Sebastian. She fantasized about being his wife. Byrne looked at her with a hard stare and said, "And where are his kids in all this? They're not going away." So now stand here so you can see. There she is talking to Sebastian near the kitchen. Listen hard so you can know what they're saying. "So the LSAT is not that bad. This is the handbook of standards that OSU is looking for." Sebastian handed it to Jenny with a wink. Jenny was excited at the wink and wondered what it meant. "In your pre-law undergrad, focus heavily on the government, political science, and philosophy classes. I would say sit in the courtroom downtown and see what goes on in a day. That's a great way to acquaint yourself." Jenny didn't hear a word Sebastian said. She stared at his face and couldn't believe they were finally alone for the first time ever. She had to tell him how she felt. Never mind Sharon and the kids. It had to be she and Sebastian as an item. She was convinced they were meant to be. Her giddy teenage self wanted to take a risk. He invited her to sit down, and she could barely focus on what he was saying. It was something about how philosophy majors score higher on the LSAT. She looked at him and touched his cheek. He stared confused and laughed. "Mr. Houston, Sebastian, I need to tell you something." He laughed as he stared at her. Little Jenny was not much older than his own kids, and her brother James played with his slightly younger son. He had watched pretty Jenny grow up and was friends with her parents, Paula and Leland, over the years. They'd exchanged preschool recommendations, soccer camp suggestions, ideas on how to get kids to sleep better, and now LSAT preparation ideas and summer job suggestions. "A minute. The window is foggy and I can't see. Can you see? What are we missing? A lot can happen in a few minutes. Hold on for a moment. Who is getting out of that car?" She has a large book and a calendar-type planner. Is that Paula? She's ringing the doorbell. I can't see them, and I don't know what was said. Sebastian can be seen approaching the door. There is Jenny. Now I can see. Jenny tried to smile at her mom, who failed to tell her she had already spoken to Sebastian about the receptionist job for Jenny at his firm. Paula walked in and looked so comfortable that it was clear Sebastian was expecting her. So yes, I think it's a great suggestion. I appreciate it for Jenny. Here's our family calendar so we can work around our lake trip. Oh, and honey, I brought the LSAT book that I got from a friend at my Richard Simmons Let's Get Physical Aerobics class. But Sebastian, you could tell me which is the best. Jenny was filled with anger and hate right now. She wanted the whole world to disappear and the only person in her universe to be Sebastian. Nothing in this moment mattered but Sebastian. But Jenny knew better than to ever roll her eyes at her parents, so she forced an enthusiastic smile and nod. Sebastian was quiet and looked mentally hazy in the face. It's a shame we missed the rest of their conversation on the couch before Paula got there. The chance meeting in front of Blockbuster in that summer of 1987 would set the path for both of their lives. Neither knew this, and both had their 2 feet in the conversation for different reasons. Sebastian did not sense anything potentially threatening from teenage Jenny, but this conversation would be the first part of a road that would run counter to what Sebastian had thought of for his life. When Jenny attended Ohio State, she did not have a car with her, so this presented the first cryptic opportunity. Like most students, she didn't want to pay for a parking pass. There was a shortage of parking spots for students, and that drove the price of a parking pass higher. She knew that her parents would get tired of picking her up on a whim if she wanted to come home. She also knew that Sebastian had cases that sometimes took him to Columbus, and if she timed it right, she could get a ride home from him. Why don't you ask him to drive you when there's a probability of a snowstorm? Maybe you two will end up in a hotel together for the night. Bern spoke in a direct way. She had given up on getting Jenny to forget the idea of Sebastian. This made Jenny shift her posture, excited at the idea, as she put a cracker in her mouth, holding the phone as she lay on the bed in her dorm. Sebastian had driven her to OSU one time when Paula and Leland had a schedule conflict. Ever since then, Jenny knew this could be a possibility. She had felt more during the drive than she'd felt for any boy she'd ever dated. Now watch this. The moment that would define everything going forward was the rainstorm. This pushed them to the next block on the road after the chance Blockbuster meeting. They were driving and talking about botany, the Department of Horticulture at OSU, which flowers look best in a home garden versus a university garden, and how the spring rain is starting. The spring rain, they both noted, helps a lot. Sebastian seemed impressed with her knowledge of so many topics. Jenny daydreamed of the two of them decorating a home together, garden included. She wondered if he too felt it. The rain and thunder splashed down harder. Jenny looked at him hopelessly and suggested they stop for a late lunch until the rain blew past. She adored the way he looked at her sideways with a grin. It was fatherly, but she wanted to believe it could be more. "I can always eat," he said quickly, pulling into a country cooking type of eatery. When they got inside, the place looked dirty and no one seated them. Jenny loved how she and Sebastian both shook their heads and stared at each other for a moment and then laughed. Both their feet began walking toward the door at the same time. She enjoyed even more how they got in the car. They both remarked something like, "That could have gone better." They drove a block more and found a place called Health Mountain. When they went inside, they were seated right away and it was clean. She and Sebastian smiled at each other. She enjoyed feeling like they were a couple, reading each other's minds. Next, the young waiter in a tie-dyed t-shirt came over and said they don't serve meat or dairy products. The special was kidney beans and a bed of bean sprouts with a small side of long grain wild rice. She and Sebastian both looked blankly at him. When he left, they both laughed and stood up at the same time. What happened next was priceless to Jenny. They both remarked at the same time. Third time's a charm. It continued to rain hard. She loved how easily they laughed after that. She talked about a place her roommate told her about off the beaten path that has Cool Ranch chicken on the menu. she heard it's a great little hole in the wall called the Pioneers. They had finished each other's sentences again. He knew exactly what she was talking about and used to go there with his buddies in college. He still didn't know that Jenny had picked OSU because of him. Jenny knew this day would change their relationship going forward. They ate as it continued to rain hard. The Pioneers eatery was quaint and cozy and served tea and biscuits, and they both ordered the famous chicken dish. When she got up to go to the bathroom, he partially stood up to be a gentleman. Was he falling for her? She talked about her commitment to justice and passion for helping others through upholding the law and advocacy for the underdog. Their conversation flowed. He told stories about past cases that affirmed for him why he became an attorney. He told about a very compelling case where two people were divorcing and the wife said the husband was nothing more than a sperm donor. She wanted full custody for the only reason of hurting her cheating husband. Sebastian shared that the case kept him up at night because it was about this man's kids. They were able to uncover definitive proof that the wife was also cheating, and a preponderance of the evidence of their 15-year marriage had once been quite loving. It was then he paused from eating, had a large grin, and shared it was a mutual split. Sebastian called it the best kind. Continuing with a grin, he remarked that he has repeat customers. Some people just can't stay single, I guess, he said this with a laugh. Jenny hoped his wife Sharon would cheat. He would make a clean break with her, and they would go forward. She enjoyed the way he now spoke to her as an adult. He let his guard down. He shared how he was ready to send people large monthly bills as they enjoyed fighting it out with their spouses. He leaned forward and smiled right at her, almost with their foreheads touching, and said, two words for you, Jenny. Billable hours. If you're a girl who likes shoes and shopping, you'll have it all. Let the clients pay your bills. The angrier they are, the more you get paid. I told you we were jackasses. He laughed and took another bite. He seemed more jovial than she had ever seen him. Was she powering him in some way? He spoke of divorce in a cavalier enough way that Jenny thought it could be a possibility. She smiled back at him and loved that he put the word we into his statement, knowing she would become what he is, a jackass, overbilling attorney. She had stopped by his home on another occasion when they were driving together. He would drop her off at OSU and head to the Columbus courthouse. She knocked and heard his wife Sharon yell, come on in, Jen. She had known Sharon her whole life. Did Sharon suspect anything? When she walked in, she loved how new and modern the house smelled. It had a large floor plan, high ceilings, and the most recent appliances. Yet there were toys on the floor and kid areas. Jenny smiled, thinking of what she and Sebastian's home would look like in the future. She could hear Sharon trying to get the kids downstairs. I said to get a dry towel. A dry one, Sharon stressed. We're going to the pool. We'll get wet anyway, Mom. Sydney, who was now 11, spoke back to her mom. Jenny had babysat Sydney since she started walking. I said a dry towel. Do as I say. Sharon smiled and shook her head at Jenny. Jenny was disappointed at how cheerful Sharon was. Didn't she know her husband might leave her for Jenny? Now, don't tell me you've changed your major 10 million times like I did. Sharon laughed at herself as she said it. Jenny smiled calmly and shook her head. No, I'm good. Pre-law it is. Jenny spoke with intentionality. Well, I'm impressed. A young lady who knows what she wants. Law can be hard, but you set your own hours and you get paid as long as people are hating each other, which is every day. For someone who spoke the word hate, Sharon was quite peaceful and every bit in the skin of being a loving wife and mother. Sebastian came out and Jenny felt an adrenaline rush. She felt the blood rush to her face. Hi, babe. Can you tell Sydney I mean for her to get down here with a dry towel and in the car? Sharon said this as she turned her cheek for Sebastian to give her a quick peck. Hey, Sidbit, Big Mama said to get down here with a dry towel now and in the car straight away. Sebastian spoke affectionately but firmly to his daughter. He and Sharon looked at each other questioningly when there was silence. Then, prancing down the stairs with Sydney, walking like Miss America, showcasing her dry towel, when she came to the bottom of the stairs, she merely gave them a thumbs up and a smile when they questioned her about the towel. Jenny was aware of how much little Sydney had matured from when she used to babysit her. Sydney used to be temperamental and prone to fits. She was now calm, and the whole family seemed to comfortably communicate. This meant that Sebastian was still investing in them. This angered Jenny. He needed to pull away from them to focus on her. He barely noticed her standing there. He then playfully slapped Sharon on the behind and told them to have fun at the pool. They could be heard talking about the new floaties for the younger ones and how Sydney had to finish her assigned reading in between swimming. Jenny knew that Sebastian would be the ideal father to their children. He assigned books to his children and put timelines on the completion of them. Jenny fantasized about Sharon's home and children, but about herself as the mother and wife. But then she shook it off. What she had just seen showed her that nothing would ever happen. This time on the drive, they talked about negotiations in relation to philosophy. Jenny was in a bad mood because she realized that any type of relationship with Sebastian beyond this might be remote. She was not even trying to impress him. She just spoke as herself in a way she never had. The combination of the topic of philosophy and swimming in a public pool had reminded her of the stories she had told to her housemates and friends. Sebastian's back was bothering him, so they stopped at a local sandwich shop and ate, just to get him out of the car for the moment. It was across from him that she shared her story. But watch hard and don't blink. This moment was made in the 80s. So I'm at the pool last summer, and I heard these kids coming up with a game all on their own. They're negotiating the rules and parameters of the game. It was clear they were aware of the power language carries and the art. I mean, the very art of deliberation. How compelling was it to consider that these children of different ages playing together and having no formal debating experience and certainly no training in negotiations could somehow, within themselves, subscribe to Aristotle's rhetoric and political frameworks? They each made an argument for the rules in the game. I was observing this, and Jenny paused to take a bite of her sandwich. She didn't notice, but for the first time, she had Sebastian's full attention. He stared hard at her. He had interrupted her, but she didn't notice. His interruption was to offer her an internship at his firm in the summer. This time, it would not be as a receptionist, as she did right out of high school. She never saw him then because he was in his office or at the courthouse. This time, he stared at her the way an awkward 15-year-old boy stares at a 17-year-old girl he idolizes and wants to ask out. His eyes looked wide. He looked vulnerable. For the first time, he wanted something from her. It was not the other way around. Jenny continued her story completely as herself and with nothing to lose. So I'm watching this negotiation, and I'm seeing leaders emerge. They were not what I would expect. The types of arguments they made promoted them as leaders or not. I also observed who was dismissed. This one boy, about 9, just kind of lost his temper if people didn't agree with him. He failed to be a leader and ended up going along with the game, but was resentful. Sebastian stared at her with something warm and deep in his eyes that few people had ever seen. He didn't expect to feel what he felt in the moment. He asked again about the internship. She smiled at him quickly, and since she had become herself in a knee-jerk way, her answer was also one that revealed she had nothing left to lose. Oh, I want to spend as much time with you as possible. So sure, I'll do an internship. Jenny realized what she had just said. He stared hard at her. He reached out to touch her hand and squeezed it. They stared at each other. Jenny had no time to feel embarrassed. She said what she said. The eye lock was something Jenny was too young to know the significance of, but she knew how she felt, and what was happening was surreal. She had dreamt of it for so long that it was a living fantasy. He then kissed her hand and said that his back is better, but he doesn't feel like driving. You could lie down, even though your back is better. Lying down is still a good thing. Jenny made the suggestion, and Sebastian signaled with his eyes toward the country town inn, visible through the window of the sandwich shop. Jenny smiled and suggested she could give him a back rub. They continued staring at each other, smiling slightly. Sebastian himself didn't know he had this behavior in him. It was not planned. Then they stood up, and that's the next block of the road. After this, Jenny felt a sense of peace she had never felt. Sebastian was continuously in her thoughts, but not the same as when she was a younger teenager. She was confident that they were moving toward an engagement together. Next, she saw her high school friends, Byrne and Elaine. They sat on the floor, and she had introduced she and Sebastian as an item. Byrne stared hard at her and asked, "Is he being seen in public with you?" Jenny told them they were eating together when on the road. Byrne clarified by asking if he took her out on an actual date anywhere. Jenny ignored the question, causing Elaine and Byrne to exchange glances. "This is highly destructive, Jen. This is the makings of a derelict life. When will you say you've had enough?" Byrne spoke firmly, slapping the floor. Elaine nodded. "Oh, if this is a derelict life, then this is exactly what I want," Jenny spun around. The hotel visits on the road continued, and no one told Paula and Leland or Sharon of how many times they saw each other. They spoke to one another easily. Jenny began talking more toward the future and what direction his firm could go. But then she noticed something. Every time they spoke of the future in law, the conversation flowed. Jenny tested the waters by speaking about what she wants personally. "I want more than a career in law. I see myself married with kids and living in an area, you know, like where I grew up," Jenny said as they lounged in the hotel room on a snowy day. "Well, you deserve a great guy. I hope you get everything you want. A girl like you will have no trouble with finding a husband and everything that follows." Sebastian spoke easily, and there was no hint of jealousy as he mused on what might be her future. This set Jenny to thinking. Didn't he imagine them together? She ventured to ask him what he saw in his own future. He looked at her like she was crazy, shutting one eye. "Sharon and I will be snowbirds somewhere, but probably stick around here for much of the year. Little Sidbit will probably be an attorney or a ballerina, as she puts it. The kids, hopefully, will be part of the firm. Nothing extravagant on my horizon." Sebastian chuckled after he spoke. After one romp in their usual hotel room, Jenny finally asked what she wanted to know. He had finally taken her out at night. They drove to the most western part of the state and found a movie theater that only shows classic, award-winning movies. They saw The Graduate with a young Dustin Hoffman as the star. Jenny didn't notice that the young man in the movie didn't want to end up with his hotel playmate. They discussed the irony in the movie and how to find real meaning in life. They each made a case for their arguments about the main character's struggle with embracing everyday expectations versus escapism and how they saw it. They debated what irony really is. Jenny felt she couldn't give enough evidence to win their debate. Would anything she said or did ever be enough for Sebastian? On the drive back, they took turns playing music of their generations. Jenny played Sebastian, The Cure, Depeche Mode, and Talking Heads. He played her Paul Simon and the Jefferson Airplane. They both agreed they loved the Talking Heads. He was impressed with her musical knowledge, but didn't realize how contrived her responses were. She had studied Sebastian since she was 15 years old. "Do you ever see yourself with me?" Jenny had turned to face him. He sat up in their hotel bed and turned away from her and laughed nervously. He spoke quickly, with his heavy, deep voice, the way she had heard Superior Court judges speak when her pre-law professors had them spend time in the courtrooms. He sounded like he was laying down the law and there would be no challenging it. "Our clients are idiots because they throw away everything they work for and give it to us. We put our own kids through college with their money. I'm not one of them. I love Sharon, and that's not going to change. Get dressed and let's get you back to school." Jenny felt defeated and angry. Those were the worst words she had ever heard. Before they began this affair, she could daydream and hope. Now she knew there was no more sidewalk in this enchanted world. It was over. She had reached the end of the short affair. As they drove, she moved her left hand for a second, thinking she would take his hand and move the steering wheel so they would hit the oncoming long-haul truck head-on. She hated not ever being enough. "Now we might have to cover our eyes again." She was parked in the front of his house on a dark night. She wasn't sure why. The night was darker than usual. Her latest fantasy was nothing like in the past. She wanted Sebastian gone for good. She could feel a completeness in knowing he couldn't be wished for any longer. She could feel her heart beating and almost see it under her sorority sweatshirt. She imagined running the firm, and no one, not even Sharon, had Sebastian. She was free of thoughts of him, and he could not go forward with Sharon. She stared at their home in the dark. She continued shaking, breathing hard. Jenny breathed hard. Her right hand squeezed the Colt 1911 as she sat in the driver's seat in the car borrowed from her parents. She had a small towel over the pistol. She began counting the shutters on all the houses, how many mailboxes there were, how many cars parked on their street, and continued breathing. She started counting the window panels on one large house. Then she counted how many trees were on the street. This calmed her down slightly. She imagined what would happen if she didn't shoot him but continued the affair. Her mind fast-forwarded to about 1995 and imagined working in his firm in downtown Cincinnati. Jenny smiled as she looked around her new office in the Houston and Dudley law firm. Every meeting meant a chance to see Sebastian. Her radio played Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up as she sang along. When a new case came across her desk or at the conclusion of a consultation with a client, she had an excuse to speak to Sebastian. He made no eye contact and spoke quickly, always seeming agitated and needing to speak to Jenny. Sebastian's sister, Debbie Houston, his partner, was friendly to Jenny. She remembered Jenny babysitting for Sebastian's kids. Deborah remained close to her sister-in-law, Sharon. But within Jenny's first year at the firm, it became obvious that Sebastian was allowing himself to be intimidated by the now 26-year-old new lawyer. Even Deborah started to notice that whatever Jenny said, even if it was not the most ideal way to handle a case, was appeased. Sebastian avoided eye contact with Jenny daily. Jenny had lunch with her old friend from high school, Elaine, who worked as a CPA a few streets over. I'm telling you, I'm horny for litigating a case with him. Whenever there's something big, I stay late and get to work closely with him, Jenny said, raising her fork to eat her salad. Well, use positive visualization to make it happen. You know what we always say. Both young ladies began quoting their favorite speech from their favorite movie in deep, mocking voices. They both tried to sound like Gordon Gekko, and they said the lines intermittently. The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good, Elaine said and took a bite of her sandwich. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies. Greed cuts through and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Both girls finished chewing and spoke in unison. Greed in all its forms. Greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind. Both girls put their fists slightly in the air and didn't care if they were loud. A few patrons at other tables recognized it from the movie Wall Street, and at other tables, some folks mouthed it with them. The speech they quoted had no meaning to them, but had every meaning to them at the same time. There's Sebastian in that big office looking at a file. Back at the firm, Sebastian sat in his office reading a case about a man who stabbed his girlfriend in a non-lethal way. He had no prior history of violence, not even a traffic violation. Thankfully, she had only minor wounds and wanted to forgive him. But the fact that he did it in a public place and her mother was there, unbeknownst to him, charges were being pressed. Sebastian had seen cases like this before and wondered, what made a person snap? Was there any difference between himself and this client or anyone else? Could any human being go too far when in a heat of passion? In a minute, you'll watch Sebastian summon Jenny into his office. You'll watch her stop to put on lipstick and walk to his office with adrenaline flowing through her veins. Sebastian will tell her the firm is moving in a new direction, and she would be better utilized in a family law firm with less focus on criminal law. Jenny would just laugh and then suggest he hire her brother James as an intern since he was now 21 and completed his pre-law degree while he prepared to enter law school. She had heard him say this many times before, and each time she began singing slightly off-key a familiar song called Take Me With You. Here they were, and it was a day that started years ago, the ebb and flow of the day, was just the seeds planted in the 1980s, even before the day they all heard Gordon Gekko's state greed works. When she snapped out of the blackmail daydream, the only place she wanted to take Sebastian was to hell with her. Jenny breathed hard and thought of what the headlines would read if she shot Sebastian. No one would save her, not even the best attorney. She was terrified more and more as the minutes went by. She began shaking, more frightened than she'd ever been. Her fear was of herself and what she'd allow herself to become. She was someone who might kill, someone with a gun who almost murdered. Jenny, in that moment, hated Sebastian for the way she felt right now and what drove her to get the gun and sit in front of his house. She imagined her parents and their boring but functional marriage. Their topics of conversation centered around where her dad, Leland, had left his reading glasses or whether his racquetball bag was in the car or not. Sometimes it was her mother reminding her father to get dried cranberries from the store and then handing him a coupon. At that moment, Jenny imagined something she never had in her life. She imagined herself with a guy close to her own age. She would not be the tragic headline. She would have what her parents have, and maybe she would have that life with another law student. This had never occurred to her. She unloaded the Colt and put it right back where her father kept it. She took a shower and thought about her parents. Her mom's mundane topics of conversation used to bother her, but now she craved them. She imagined if she gave a chance to the young men her own age and what that might look like. "Mom, did you get those crackers with the Gouda flavor?" Jenny would ask her mom as she put on a sweatshirt, still with wet hair. "Oh, aren't those to die for? I reminded your dad to get more, but he forgot. Did you know those sandals I bought last summer had a strap rip? I'm so mad because I can't find a cute pair like that anywhere. Believe me, I've been looking. You and I need some serious shoe shopping to get ready for the summer. Now check this out. Roll up your sleeves, Leland. Show her what happened when you were at the gym." Jenny's mom, Paula, chuckled a little. Leland grinned while he was eating his salad and said, with every bit of good nature still chewing, "What? It's too much work. I don't want to roll up my sleeves." "Show her how you slid on your arm when you were playing racquetball. Jenny, your dad's become such an enthusiastic player that he's outplaying the younger guys." Jenny smiled at how her mother and father never once put each other down. They grandstanded for each other. This moment of boring mom and dad dinner was made possible by Jenny's decision not to kill Sebastian, not to keep sleeping with Sebastian, and to stop thinking about Sebastian. The conversation turned to how she made the sauce for the lasagna and how cooked tomatoes are so much healthier than raw. She smiled as her mom and dad seemed enthralled with the idea and talked about what they put in the sauce and how they don't understand why people put sugar in tomato sauce. Jenny was starting to feel safe from her former self, a potential killer. Every time she heard her parents' voices, she felt safe again. The mundane became her safety. She had come dangerously close to changing everyone's world. As the 1980s faded into the 1990s, the new Jenny would have a fiancé named Blake, an attorney who adored her and was as ordinary in his conversations as her parents. Blake was practicing law at his dad's firm and was perceived as serious-minded and sometimes even arrogant. However, when he was not working, he came across as a fraternity boy prankster. They would play Scrabble and her mom would be paired up with Blake while Jenny and her dad would be a team. Jenny's mom and Blake would play off each other, even using accents they would come up with together unrehearsed. They would keep their accents the whole game. Jenny would marvel at how her parents' biggest problems were not that they had a daughter in prison, but what to serve for dinner or whether they needed to clean the oven again. What she loved more than anything was that her parents knew exactly who she loved. Blake knew about her fling with Sebastian and was unaffected by it. He even got her to see some remote humor in it, if there was any to be had. Her parents would never find out. Blake did not, however, know about her brief plot to kill Sebastian. The only person she told was Blake's uncle, who was a pastor. To prepare for their wedding, they had each met with him privately and gave confessions. He had smiled widely at Jenny and put his arms out and simply said, "You're forgiven, honey." She wanted that alone to set her free, but sometimes it seemed too simple. Blake's closeness with Jenny's mother, Paula, was intentional to ensure Jenny was healed from her secret relationship with Sebastian that relied upon no one knowing them as a couple. Blake, the ever-intelligent and outgoing attorney, made his presence in her life large and loud and became undeniable to her family. 1 week before her wedding, Jenny, Blake, her brother James, and her parents would be talking about how much they dreaded any kind of dancing at the wedding. They would book dance lessons for all the bridesmaids, groomsmen, and family. This is where she would hear Blake, her brother James, and her mother joking about running far away if they had to dance at the wedding. But watch. As they arrived at the strip mall, where the dance classes were, Prince and the Revolution's Take Me With You was playing. In true form, Blake and Paula would begin singing it, and now James joined in. When the dance class was over, and they walked back out into the dark and rainy strip mall, Paula and Leland would run into Sebastian and Sharon and excitedly share that Jenny was to marry Blake. An introduction would be made to Blake, who, knowing full well who he was, would laugh outwardly like a teenager about the whole introduction, unaware of the depth of it. The Talking Heads song Psycho Killer would be playing. The universe and all its mystery owned the music and the connections to the past and present events and would circle around all of them faster than anyone could feel. Jenny would smile as she remembered their debates about irony, knowing for certain this was enough.